Lowdown with Imran Ansari, and you're listening Saturday afternoon. And my next guest is not James Bond, but he is the man to talk to about things, all things law, and really the intersection with some politics here. And that's what we're going to be talking about with my next guest. It's William A. Jacobson. He's a professor of law at Cornell University. He is the founder of the Equal Protection Project. And what is the Equal Protection Project, or EPP? It's a project of the Legal Insurrection Foundation, LIF, a Rhode Island tax-exempt 501c3. And it's devoted to the fair treatment of all persons without regard to race or ethnicity. The guiding principle of the EPP is that there is no good form of racism, and I agree with that. The remedy for racism never is more racism. The LIF was founded by my next guest, William A. Jacobson, and he is, again, one of the leading national free speech and free expression investigative and media organizations, or the head of that organization, I should say. And the LIF researches and reports on some of the most important issues facing our country at school campuses, universities, businesses, and government. It also walks alongside individuals who are at the epicenter of free speech attacks, shining light on attempts to cancel dissidents. And someone who stands by the First Amendment, that is a great initiative. Professor Jacobson, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me back.
So, Professor, let's first talk about some of the issues that we're seeing with the former president, Donald Trump, who is now also leading the polls, at least for the GOP, and really has knocked out all potential challenges within the party. And quite incredibly, I think I'm well placed to say this, maybe our next president, just if you're looking at the numbers, right? But we all know now we can't trust polls, political polls, and we're still relatively early on in an election year. We haven't gotten really to the meat and potatoes fight between Biden and Trump. But, you know, it's still somewhat of a daunting, sight. Or if you're on the other side, you may be happy about this, right? So, let's give two perspectives here. You're either terrified or you're thrilled. What do you think? I mean, we're talking about a candidate who is facing multiple prosecutions in various jurisdictions, and civil lawsuits that have yielded millions upon millions of dollars of judgment, which he's now facing, notwithstanding appeal. So what are your thoughts about that? Just this aspect that we have a potential, leading presidential candidate, former president, who is undergoing really a legal attack on all fronts.
Well, I think that overall impact of this is it is a broad attempt to take down the leading Republican candidate, to either ruin him financially or to tie him up financially or to put him in prison or to get him convicted. And I don't think it's any coincidence that this is all happening in an election year. Of the four prosecutions against him, criminal prosecutions, three of them clearly could have been brought 2 years ago because they're based on things related to the 2020 election. But they waited until close to an election year where they filed the cases the year before the election, knowing it would run into the election year. So I don't think you can look at the situation and say it's just coincidence or, well, it's his fault because he engaged allegedly in criminal behavior. These were timed for an election year. They wanted us to be talking in 2024 about prosecutions of Trump, whether they happen, whether he gets convicted. It's the hot topic. And so we're spending time talking about that instead of our open border, where thousands of criminals are coming across the border as jails get emptied in South America and Central America. So, yeah, I think that's the big takeaway. There is a concerted effort where prosecutors have abused, particularly in New York State, have abused their power for political purposes. And that includes the civil lawsuit by Letitia James, and it includes the, well, it wasn't a prosecution office, but it includes that ridiculous libel case against Trump, which I think will not be sustained, at least not the damages on appeal. So that's the big takeaway. There is a concerted effort to take down Trump.
Yeah, and what's concerning with that is if you're going to bring cases such as the ones that we've seen, and especially in such a polarized climate politically, you want to make sure that you're going to bring a strong case, you know, not something that's going to be flimsy, not something that you're going to potentially end up having knocked out. Because if it is a political motivated prosecution or prosecutions, which really should not exist, as a former prosecutor, I could tell you that should not be the motivation when you're bringing a case against someone, particularly a criminal case. But, you know, if you would think that if you're motivation was a political motivation, then you would want to make sure that you have an ironclad case. Otherwise, you're going to just end up feeding into what you're trying to work against. Would you agree?
Well, that's right. And it's not just speculation that at least the New York Manhattan criminal case and the New York civil case were politically motivated. And we know that because the prosecutors told us that when they were running for office, that their goal is to get Trump. Letitia James was particularly open and effusive about how she wanted to get not only Donald Trump, but his family. That's completely unseemly from a prosecutor. That's an abuse of prosecutorial power. And nobody in New York State really wants to talk about that because, for the most part, the media hates Donald Trump. So it's really quite something where you have people running their prosecution campaigns to become prosecutors to get a specific person. That's not supposed to happen. These are completely tainted. There should have been either an independent investigation or whatever it is. And we've seen that they have therefore stretched legal theories, which have held up in the state Supreme Court, which your listeners will know is actually the lowest court, the trial court, so far. But the theory in the Alvin Bragg prosecution is really novel and was criticized by a lot of liberal legal commentators, which is they took an old, stale, misdemeanor books and records violation and concocted a legal theory to turn it into a felony, and so they could extend the statute of limitations. And in the civil case, the Attorney General's office used a civil statute that's never been used in this way before. This is novel. So you have two prosecutors saying they're going to run for office to get Donald Trump, and in the case of Letitia James, his family also, who then come up with stretches of theories which have held up at a trial court level so far. We'll see if they hold up on appeal. But the appeals won't be decided for a year or two or three. And so we're not going to know during the presidential election whether they hold up on appeal or not. I don't think they will, but we'll find out. So this is so abusive. It's really terrible what's happened, particularly in New York State. We can talk separately about the federal prosecutions, but what's going on in New York State with the weaponization of prosecutors' offices, both criminally and civilly, is really troubling, and it's really something that people need to be talking more about.
You know, that's great insight, Professor Jacobson. I mean, I think, I'm with you on all points there, including, yeah, when the Bragg indictment was released, it was sort of an anticlimactic moment once you got into the indictment and you're looking for really some real charges of substance there. And you're left sort of scratching your head thinking, you know, especially as a former prosecutor, that, you know, if this wasn't Donald Trump, would you really be prosecuting someone for these crimes? And you know, the artful sort of use of the law, and in order to stretch the statute of limitations, in order to get some charges, in order to bring it. But that's, you know, you don't. I think it's a dangerous prospect because you're going to lose the faith of the public, and you're also going to open up precedent where political offices maybe used, you know, for, as you say, the weaponization of the prosecutorial agency and what we've seen here.
But in New York, they don't have to worry about that. Democrats in New York do not have to worry about the weaponization being turned against them because they know it won't happen. The attorney general now is a Democrat, is a Trump hater. Lead prosecutors in most of the counties are Democrats. So I hear this a lot, and I understand it, that they are destroying the credibility of the court system, the credibility of the prosecutorial system, and it could come back to haunt them. But they know, and we know it won't, at least not in New York State. Now, perhaps if red states started retaliating, maybe if they started doing this, but they probably won't either. I mean, that's the disparity between the Democrats and the Republicans when it comes to abuse of the law. So, no, yes, it does set a really bad precedent, but it's not a precedent that Democrats in New York State are the least bit worried about.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head, Professor. Professor, I want you to stick with me. We're going to take a quick break, and then I want to talk more about these Trump cases with you. You're listening to The Legal Lowdown with Imran Ansari. We'll be right back.
Ibotta makes it rain real cash back every time you shop for groceries and more. Now Ibotta is making it rain real cash when you visit their cash cloud at the Oculus starting Tuesday, March 19th through Saturday, March 23rd. That's right. It's going to rain real cash at the Oculus this week from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day. Visit the Oculus and bring friends to the cash cloud for photo ops and a chance to catch some cash. If you can't make it, visit makeitrain.ibotta.com. That's I-B-O-T-T-A for your chance to catch up to $100.
My name is Imran Ansari, and I lead the Civil Litigation Division of Idala, Bertuna & Kamens, the preeminent New York litigation law firm. Have you been injured in a construction site accident? Have you fallen from a scaffold, ladder, or height while on the work site? If the answer is yes, then you may be entitled to significant monetary compensation for your injuries. In most cases, the law in New York favors you as the plaintiff if injured in a fall while working on someone else's property. It is important you speak to an attorney right away to make sure your rights are protected. Myself and our team of experienced trial attorneys will never settle for less than what you deserve. We are always ready to go to court to fight for you and seek justice. If you or a loved one have been injured in an accident, don't delay. Call Idala, Bertuna & Kamens at 212-486-0011, 212-486-0011, or visit us at idalalaw.com. Idala, Bertuna & Kamens, fighting for justice, fighting for you. You're listening to The Legal Lowdown with Imran Ansari, and I am speaking with Professor William A. Jacobson of Cornell University School of Law. Professor, let's jump back into the discussion on the Trump cases, but I actually want to talk about some news that came out of the Georgia case this week. So Fani Willis was facing disqualification on motion by the defendants, and on the Law and Crime Network, where I'm a host, we were following that live, the hearing as to the disqualification of Fani Willis, and the judge rendered a decision this past week, and she is not going to be disqualified from that case. I want to get your thoughts on that.
That was a very bizarre decision by the judge. What he found was that there was an appearance of a conflict of interest between the two prosecutors, the lead county prosecutor, Fani Willis, and her lover, I forget his first name, Wade, who she hired for Nathan Wade, who she hired for this prosecution and who he funneled a lot of money to, both through payroll and also they had some sort of arrangement that's very murky with cash transactions. So he found that that created an appearance of impropriety. So far, so good. But then he says he's going to let them decide which of them drops out. Why would a judge do that? If there's an appearance of impropriety, they should both be gone. Well, I mean, that was the craziest thing I've ever seen, or one of the crazier things, where a judge finds two people in a prosecution, and it's important that it's a criminal prosecution, that two prosecutors have created the appearance of impropriety, and then he lets them decide which one gets kicked off the case. I mean, it's like if you found two people robbing a bank, would you say, well, you two decide which one of you gets prosecuted? I mean, that made no sense to me. They should have both been off the case. And the judge perhaps understands that maybe his decision is a little strange because he did certify an immediate appeal of that ruling, which means the appellate court in Georgia doesn't have to hear the case, but they can, because normally you can't appeal something that's not a final ruling or a final judgment. So it's called an interlocutory appeal. So he has certified an interlocutory appeal. As I understand Georgia procedure, that doesn't mean they have to hear it, but at least the appellate court can hear it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Professor, that I was surprised by the decision. In fact, when we were covering it, I was when you have an issue as to disqualification before the court, and especially on a case like this, and it's discretionary, the judge has the discretion based on the evidence elicited during the hearing to make the decision on disqualification. I thought that the judge would err on the side of caution, if anything, and grant the defendant's motion to disqualify. Because, again, if you're going to try to uphold the integrity of this prosecution have some trust, I should say, from the public, and there's many people who are skeptical about these cases, then you would at least want to eliminate some of the potential pitfalls or problems, including this Fani Willis issue. And I was pretty surprised, having followed the hearings, that he did not disqualify her, because, again, it's not like the case would go away. It's just that this prosecutor would be off the case, and there would have to be a changing of the guards. Were you just as surprised?
Yes. As I understand Georgia procedure, it would actually have to go to a different county prosecutor's office if she is disqualified as the county prosecutor. But it would not have gone away. It wouldn't have had to be moved out of Georgia. It would have caused some delay. And that's, of course, what the political motivations here for Fani Willis, just like Letitia James and just like Alvin Bragg. She wants this case in Georgia to go to trial before the election. If she had been removed, it would have been, I would say, impossible to get it to trial before the election. It's highly unlikely now at this point, but it would have turned highly unlikely to impossible. And that's, again, going to the whole thing. The prosecutors in these cases want the trials before the election. Well, if that's the case, why didn't they bring this case 2 years ago? Everything in the Georgia case relates to events that took place in late 2020 and early 2021. Why did you wait until 2023 to file the case? And we know why, because they wanted the case to go to trial during an election year. So Georgia is just as inappropriate as New York State in this. And there's also the specter of local prosecutors, really county-level prosecutors, manipulating federal elections through these strained prosecutions. And several of the counts, not all of them, but several of the counts against Trump were thrown out in the court in Georgia, particularly the one that everybody talked about and really gave rise to the case, which was Trump's phone call with the Secretary of State that we've all heard about finding votes. I don't see how that's prosecutable. I don't think any reasonable interpretation of that conversation was that Trump was asking the Secretary of State to violate the law. And the judge has said, you haven't specified, prosecutors, what law he was supposedly telling the Secretary of State to violate. So I think that, Georgia is another example of a county-level prosecutor injecting herself into the presidential election for the specific purpose of disrupting the presidential campaign of the likely Republican nominee.
Yeah. And let's now travel back to New York for the civil cases. Now, Donald Trump is facing millions of dollars in judgments, and the headlines this past week was that he wasn't able to secure a bond. So even though he is appealing, there's no stay on his need or requirement to satisfy these judgments. Now, there's a glimmer of hope here, I guess, in terms of money for Donald Trump. And there was a article this past week that he may be on the verge of a windfall of billions of dollars, although it may not come through in time in order to satisfy these judgments. But he may be able to make $3 billion as the company behind his social media platform, Truth Social, is on the verge of going public. What are your thoughts about Truth Social and that news? And do you think it's going to help him with all these judgments?
Well, I knew that he would have trouble getting a bond for the civil court judgment in the Letitia James case. It's just so enormous. He has posted a bond to stay enforcement of the judgment in the libel case. But he now needed almost half $1 billion, because when you post a bond on appeal, you're asking the insurance company to essentially make good on the judgment if you don't after the appeal is resolved. And the insurance company puts itself on the hook. You're asking an insurance company to put itself on the hook potentially for $500 million. And in order to do that, they're going to want rock solid collateral, liquid collateral that will cover them, because the insurance companies don't do these appeal bonds in order to lose money. They do it to essentially eliminate any risk to them. So very frequently, I've seen you have to post cash or marketable securities. But what Trump has more than anything is real estate. And as we know from Letitia James' pursuit of this case, real estate valuations can vary. And so an insurance company is going to want probably double or triple the amount of the bond in real estate, because they don't know what these properties are really going to fetch. And so that, I knew he would have a lot of trouble getting that, because that's just too big a number for any insurance company to take on that risk. And again, on appeal bonds, the insurance companies want to take on zero risk. They just want to make money on the bond. And so I knew that would be a problem. He does have, it's in the papers, and I don't claim to fully understand the securities structure that he has created, some sort of special purpose corporation that will essentially take Truth Social public. I mean, I think that's a fair characterization of what the end result would be, is there would be a public corporation whose main asset is Truth Social. And that is reported to net Trump billions of dollars when it happens. But first of all, that process is going to take time. Not going to happen Monday when the stock market opens. And even if it did, it's widely assumed that Trump would not be able to liquidate his position in that right away, because why would people buy stock in Truth Social? It's because of Donald Trump being an owner who would have an incentive to make it big. So yes, it could bail him out eventually, but at least from the reports I've seen, we're looking at least several months. And even then, his money may be tied up in it for years, because he won't be allowed to liquidate his publicly traded shares right away. He would tank the stock price if he did that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, at least at some point, he may be realizing an influx of cash from this. But we'll wait and see. But Professor Jacobson, I got to tell you, this was a great conversation, and I would truly hope that you would join us again, especially as we navigate this 2024 election year. I think your insight was great, and we keep tabs on all these cases that Donald Trump is facing. Professor Jacobson, thanks for joining me.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. What a great show we had today on the Legal Lowdown with